All right, you maggots. Just because it's chow time here at Balduke Prison doesn't mean you get to act up. So everyone be nice and eat your food.
So, what are you all in here doing time for?
I'm in for mugging. They call me the back alley bandit. What about yourself, mate?
Me? I was a political appointee, spending my time here for some needed vacation. Hey, new guy, you with the red hair, what are you doing here?
Oh, me? Oh, I'm Adol. Apparently I've caused one too many shipwrecks. I mean, it's actually kind of nice right now, being someplace that is nowhere near an ocean.
Really? That's great. Hey, why does it seem like the cafeteria is suddenly being flooded?
So no one said all games were gonna be this way. Backlog's a joke, a choke, gamer cards at my hay. It's like you always play 2 years behind. When you really need a boost to heart, to health, or even your mind. No, Cal will be there for you.
She'll say games that are so.
Matt will be there for you.
When you're feeling that you're stuck.
We'll be there for you.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the dogie to my Adol, Mr. Matt Mason.
Oh, I was wondering when you would realize that I've been working out a little bit. Yeah. See those shoulders?
Are you going to crash through a wall?
I don't plan on it, but if the situation arises, I might be up for that.
I can't remember if Doki crashed through a wall in this game or not. I don't think he did.
He did not.
Wow. No crash through a wall, no shipwreck. What kind of ease game are we talking about tonight?
A good one, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, the best one in the series, I would argue. Though I've heard a lot of people have debate between 8 and 9. We talked Ease 8 last year, now we're talking Ease 9 Monstrum Nox.
There's a bunch of people who love Oath and Fel'Ghana too, Kelly.
Yeah, Oath is pretty good as far as the old school ones go. I'm looking forward to that remake. And I don't know, I gotta admit, I do love my memories in Salsetta, but this one, I felt like this one matured the series a little bit.
Certainly took it a step forward.
We've got the 10th one next month, or no,
yes.
Almost in next month. I mean, we're still in August, but it's, October 25th.
The one where somebody thought it was a good idea to give Adol a ship?
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this time Adol is going to prison.
Someone's got to punish him for all those ships he's crashed.
And the relics he's lost.
I forgot to introduce everybody. One of those voices you hear is Josh Carpenter.
Ahoy, ahoy.
The other one, Robert Albright, a.k.a. the Anime Man.
Mighty Tam.
Mighty Tam.
Tam.
It's an acronym for Anime Man.
Yes, but I don't like being confused with the YouTuber. His fans are rabid.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just call you Tam then. And yeah, we're going to have a big old discussion about Monstrum Nox, so going to have a brief musical interlude with some beautiful music from that game, and then we'll come back and just dive right in. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Ease 9 Monstrum Nox, originally released in Japan on September 26, 2019, and then came out roughly 2 years later, February 2nd, 2021. Hey, my husband's birthday. For PS4, and then later came to Stadia and Windows in July 2021. Switch just to North America in July 2021, and then PS5 in May 2023. I'm amused at how much Falcom tried to support the Stadia, the Google thing.
They were willing to take Google's money. That's all. That's as far as it goes. I don't think there was any love there. It's just like, oh, you're going to give us money? Sure, we'll take that.
Why not reach a larger audience? We'll crank out a port.
We don't care. And I would be shocked if that didn't cover the entire cost of that port.
Yeah, and this is one of those games that I was in a period where I cannot remember if I played this on PS4 or PS5.
Well, that's because there. Well, depends on exactly when you play it. The PS5 version came out much later. I played it for review, so I got it before it came out. And the PS4 version, at that point, I was playing it on. I had a PS5, and I was playing it on there. And the problem was is that even though, you know, PS4, PS5 supposed to be compatible, it had serious issues running on PS5. Like, I'm going through my review notebook, and it's just like, Crash 6, Crash 8, Crash 12.
Oh. Yeah, after I saw the date, I realized, no, I got my PS5 in the summer of that year, so this was definitely a PS4 game. But that whole two-year period is going to be kind of fuzzy with me getting PS4 versus PS5 games. But I'm glad that I did PS4 on PS4 because it sounds like you had a miserable time.
I think it mostly got fixed by the day one patch.
Well, that's good, at least. Oh,
I played the PC version.
So you were playing a preview copy, Josh?
I have no issue with it.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. They send me a code, I don't know, like a week and a half before it launched, something like that.
Okay, that makes sense. But, so this one had been in development for a little while, and the Falcom president said that he wanted to lean more towards an adventure genre, and also said that he kind of wanted a new axis of direction and movement for the series compared to Lacrimosa of Donna. And what we got was just nothing short of amazing, because this game takes place in a huge open city. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Arkham City.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That was the vibes I got. It was like Batman, very much.
Yeah. Also, I had
medieval Batman. Granted.
Yeah. I hadn't played any Assassin's Creed games, but I was also getting that vibe too. Since you're just running around in that huge city, and the spots that you can get to in this city are nothing short of astounding.
I think it hews a little bit more to the Arkham games, just with the monstrum abilities, kind of like almost kind of hint back to the abilities that Batman has in the Arkham games. Like even especially the third eye of Dahl. I mean, that is directly taken basically from the Arkham games, where Batman has abilities to see, like, you know, special things. Yeah.
Is my mic picking up?
Yeah.
We're hearing you.
Okay. Just I had to change a mic setting because it wasn't my headset for some reason before. So I mean, let's face it, Arkham didn't do anything new with that either. I mean, wasn't the new Tomb Raider out before the new Arkham games?
To be honest, I don't remember. I don't really keep track of those series as far as release dates. I just know that running around gliding and running up walls and using the in-game version of the hookshot was giving me major Batman vibes.
Yeah, so the new Tomb Raider came out in 2013, and Arkham Knight was 2015. So okay. I'm talking about the eye thing, you know, searching for hidden stuff, you know, that's been around for a good number of years, but they did it so well. I that was one of the fun abilities, especially since it was the doll who gave it to you, because she technically doesn't have actual eyes.
So kind of tying the plot and the gameplay together, this game starts out with Adol pretty much getting kidnapped by the Roman Empire, which is his long-standing enemy in the series, and then ending up in jail. And as he's trying to escape from jail, a mysterious woman shoots him with a gun, and he gets these special powers and gets called the Crimson King. And that's about the gist of the story, because I could not find a decent plot summary of this game, because the plot is kind of crazy.
Well, and I mean, the first, what, like, one, two, three, five, six chapters are you meeting each of the different monstrums, the other characters who have these special abilities, and kind of going through their little backstory and figure, you know, like, and they kind of have a little bit of character development. And in each one you're doing, you're unlocking a new part of Balduk. So even though it's all set in this one city, like, each of the, it's part of the conceit of these powers is that, like, you know, like, you're tied to the city, you can't leave it, and you have to defeat these enemies in the Monstrum Nox in order to, like, unlock the next area of the next part of the city that you go to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, apparently I was wrong. The first game in the Arkham series was out in 2009. Wheels corrected me.
Yeah, and that was
still a lot of games have been using that mechanic now, so it's easy to forget which one came out first.
I just, the first Arkham game is the one I remember the most because I watched my husband play that one a lot when we lived at the apartment, because we only had the one TV in the living room, and watching him do the whole takedown and zipping around and gliding with Batman was really fun to watch. And that's why it was reminding me, or this game was reminding me of the Batman stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this game is Falcom, like, cribbing on some of those, like, city open world sort of games, you know, in a way that certainly I never really expected Falcom to do. I think of Falcom as my lovable little, you know, Japanese developer. And so they've done, you know, they're usually doing more with less, and this is way more than I ever expected from them. The Arkham games have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of developers, and Falcom has like 40 people total.
Yeah, and their last two major games in the series were big open world wilderness areas, which was kind of neat, but when you have a city, you know, making a city can be kind of complicated, especially if you don't want it to feel dead.
Yeah.
And they did a fabulous job of making Balduk just look completely alive.
You're doing merchants. A forest, it's easy to do like four or five trees and then duplicate a bunch and that kind of stuff. You can't hide that in a city in the same sort of way.
No. You've got all sorts of buildings to deal with. You have people that you've got to deal with. I remember Balduk having a bunch of canals and stuff that kind of led around. And
there was also the shopping market. There was a Colosseum. I mean, it was a full-built city.
And it had a ton of verticality to it. It, which, you know, like, as you get later in the game and unlock a lot of the Monstrum powers, like, not only were they just a lot of fun way to traverse, but every single time you get a new Monstrum power, you'd have, like, a reason to go back to earlier parts of the cities to see, you know, what are the new places I can get to now that I couldn't get to before. And it just gave you a new reason to do those areas over again.
And they're all really cool powers, too. Like, running up walls, gliding. They're just cool. And they look cool.
That voice you hear is Wheels, by the way, joining us a little bit later.
Apologies for my tardiness.
No worries. You got kiddos. But they do a good job of giving you some of the really cool powers early. Like, you start out with the hook shot. That's Adol's default ability. And then the next chapter, they give you the ability to run up walls, which kind of opens up a lot of stuff. And then it surprised me that they give you the glide so early. Because usually in most games like this, that's like one of the last things that you get.
You also get one where you like turn into shadow and can move like into really small spaces.
Yeah, I think that's one of the last ones that you get.
That is the last one you get, yeah.
Because you've also
kind of go into the ground. Yeah.
Yeah, because you've also got the ability to break walls and then the basically the detective vision ability. And They dole these out pretty early in the game, and then the rest of the game, they just kind of turn you loose and let you go nuts and explore everywhere you want. And then I thought that most of the game was going to take place within the city walls, but no, they kind of let you go out in the city in some of the points too, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, and the area surrounding Bolduc is also very interesting because, I mean, it doesn't have quite the array of areas.
Doesn't have the diversity of environs that some of the other earlier games has, but they put all, most of their effort, obviously, into Bolduc because that had to kind of like shine.
That's your hub.
Yeah, I don't think it really feel like, I never get the sense that, like, yes, it doesn't have as many diverse areas as like East 8, but it never really felt boring. Like, I didn't feel like I was, any of the areas were any less interesting or anything. It just, everything was pretty well designed, and like going to a new dungeon or, you know, wandering around outside the city was pretty exciting. But I mean, even just wandering around areas you've been through before, they all look nice. They're fun to climb around in. I was worried about this game when I first like saw it, and I'm honestly playing it, nothing that I thought was going to bother me did.
It was definitely one where I was worried if they were just biting off more than they could really chew.
Right,
you know, they were promising so much, all these different abilities, and I'm like, are they really going to, is Falcom really going to be able to pull that off and make it feel as good? Because, I mean, to me, that's part of what I love about the Falcom games is just like how tight and how good the controls always feel. And you don't want, you know, like some sloppy powers kind of like messing with the way the game itself feels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I agree. They could have screwed this up pretty easily, but I think what helped is their anime art style, so that they don't have to worry about things being too hyper realistic, and just having a really good city layout.
I will admit, I just loved running up buildings all the time. I really did.
It's so cool.
I loved running up buildings. I loved gliding. I loved seeing how high I could get with the hookshot. And then later on running around with the, I'm just going to call it detective vision, seeing what kind of stuff I could find that was hidden, which literally opens up another layer of the exploration. I feel like I spent most, there'd be some nights that I wouldn't even progress the story or get anything done because I would just spend the whole night trying to find treasure chests that I couldn't find initially, or trying to 100% some of the maps. I didn't 100% the game, unfortunately, because I think I had to, I don't know what was coming out that I wanted to move on to, but I put a lot of time into the game, exploring and just running around doing stuff.
What surprised me about this game, and like normally like a single player RPG like this, I don't necessarily like watch anyone stream it. I don't always find that interesting, but I watched Paws play through like the whole game just because it was so cool to watch. And I really think that says a lot about the quality of the game. Like just sitting watching someone play this game is fun. That's how cool.
Honestly, I actually had no real interest in the East games until I actually was watching Paws play this on our Twitch channel. Like, I just didn't like, I remember seeing the old East games and being like, these old East games, they're not really something I look like I would enjoy. Whereas this one, I watched her play and I was like, okay, I'm willing to give this a try. So I got it. And then I also played 8 too, and I really enjoyed both of those. So I've actually now have bought every East game that's available on Steam.
And the funny thing, while I was doing my research on this, is that this is the first game since 5 on the Super Nintendo that they developed with consoles in mind. Usually they're PC first.
Well, then they were PSP for quite a while.
Yeah.
And yes. that had been really holding them back for, you know, like they were kind of stuck on PSP and Vita. I mean, Ys 8 was designed for Vita first.
Yeah. And, oh, I didn't
know. It came out on Vita.
Yeah. Came out on Vita first, man. PS4 version came later.
That's right.
Because I I had my pre-order for the Vita version and then canceled it for PS4 because I wanted to see it on the big screen. Huh, that's interesting.
See the big hole on the big screen?
Yeah. God. And Falcom, or not Falcom, I'm sorry, NIS America kind of learned their lesson from the chop job that was the localization in 8, because they brought out their A game with this one.
Yeah, that relationship got off to a choppy start for sure, but I feel like it's really paid off in the end.
Yeah, they've done a good job with the localizations going forward and haven't had nearly the problems that they had initially. Mm. Did anybody play this on Switch?
I did, yes.
Okay, did it run okay?
It's okay. They're late. The Switch ports after this get a lot better. It's not the best, but it's not horrible by any stretch of the imagination. But I mean, if you think performance is something that you would bother you, I wouldn't necessarily recommend playing it on Switch. But it's fine.
I mean, I've
played worse.
For the most part, I don't really notice performance, but this was after kind of the bad experience I had playing Trails of Cold Steel 3 on the Switch, which I kept getting crashes and soft locks. So I was like, yeah, anything action-y, I probably ought to do PlayStation.
Yeah, it's fine, though.
But I get that for this kind of game, where it is like exceedingly fast-paced.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is one of those where, you know, it's not just a turn-based RPG.
Yeah, the combat in this game felt so good. They brought back their triple, what would you call it, the tri-weakness thing?
Yes.
Slash, blunt, and piercing damage, where each character has that. But then they also let you equip accessories that would change up the damage types too, so that you could have your favorite characters and really kind of experiment with how you wanted the combat to play out, which I thought was a nice thing, because I wanted to keep White Cat in my party the whole time because she's my favorite character.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. She has one attack where she like runs up an enemy that I just use endlessly because it's the best.
And generally on like normal difficulty, like it's not so punishing that you have to be like very, very careful about the weaknesses. It's usually much more if you're playing on the higher difficulties that you really have to pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, I tried playing it on hard for a while, and it gets really, really
harsh. Oh, they ramp up the difficulty big time. If you want a challenge, it's there if you want it.
Well, but there are also accessories in the game where you can add more styles to the characters. Like, there's one really late game that allows them to basically have no weaknesses for the attack triangle that the game uses.
Yeah.
And I put that immediately on Doll, because I thought Doll was the... Like, don't get me wrong. I love all the characters in the game. All the characters are great. Obviously, I do have an affinity for the ladies, but Doll was my favorite one to use.
Yeah, this is something...
White Cat amused me, though, because whenever you used her ability, which is the one that allows you to run up walls, you could actually see little, like, paw prints.
Mm-hmm. Very cute. I regret not buying her plush from the NetIS store.
Oh, I have one of those up on a shelf. Got it at PAX 2 years ago.
Cute.
I saw it and was like, well, I'm not leaving without that.
kind of an interesting game, given that Adol has to basically cover up his trademark red hair for the majority of the game so that he could actually go incognito.
Right off the bat, but then they give him a red scarf so you still know it's him.
Yeah. Not gonna lie, he kind of looked like a Trails character to me with the blue hair. I can't remember if it was blue or black.
Kind of bluish gray, I think.
Yeah.
And you have a nice little hub area and the Dandelion Bar. And then that's where you pick up your side quests and you can upgrade your weapons and buy stuff. And kind of like they did with Ease 8, each side quest you completed could add different NPCs to the bar that would give you access to more things like the blacksmith or the shop or what have you. I like
the fact that the bar was an actual bar too. So as you're trying to leave, you'd see customers like just hang out in the bar because it had a basement. The basement was your base, and the bar was the cover.
But I like it when games do that, where they add basically suicoding, where they add stuff to your area as you're finishing side quests, because it gives you a reason to do the side quests other than just side content, which I appreciate.
You can tell someone at Falcom has a thing for Suikoden, like stuff like Cold Steel 2, where goodness gracious, the second half of that game was kind of a Suikoden game.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. I can't wait to get to that in like 10 years then. So far behind.
So many games. All the games.
So then, getting back to the story, they kind of pulled the wool over your eyes a little bit with the story, because you've got the one section where you're playing as Crimson King and his little band of superheroes, and then you've got the other section where you're playing as Prisoner Adol, and you break out of prison every night and you kind of slowly make your way through it and find different areas and stuff. And the whole time it's like, okay, is the whole game a flashback? Flash forward?
I loved the way they were playing around with that. Like, you never, when you're playing the game the first time through, you're never quite sure, like, is this all in the past? Is it the future? Is it a dream? What exactly is going on till you get to the very end? Chapter, something like that.
I remember Paz's reaction when he was playing that live, just being like, what?
Yeah, because they throw that swerve at you, like, right away. Like, you get out of prison and, like, get the base all set up, and then suddenly
you're back in prison.
You're in prison? Like, what?
So spoilers, since we spoil everything on Backtrack, it turns out one of them was an alchemic homunculus clone.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Monster Box Adol, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Right. Like I said, I had a hard time finding out story information for this game, so forgive me if I get stuff.
Real Adol was in a like that floating in that tube the whole time. And then at the end of the game, like, he merges your personalities and memories together.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, that part of the story is like, okay, anime stuff to explain away the cool little setup.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I didn't pay a lot of attention to the story in this game. Not because I thought it was bad, but because I was so more focused on wanting to run around and beat stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't like a Trails game. It's like, the story's great. I enjoy the story and all the lore and the East games, but you can just kind of play it for action-y goodness as well.
And then I was reading some weird stuff about how a lot of the bosses in the game are taken from Adol's memories
and tie back
to older Ease games, which I didn't pick up on initially.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, almost all the bosses are somehow related to his memories of things he's fought in the past, at least as far as story-wise goes for that game. And this is actually even mentioned in the game.
You'd forgotten. I forget, there was like one or two from 8. And when I noticed that, I'm like, oh, are they recycling this stuff? And it's like, yes, they are. And they gave us an explanation for why.
Didn't the homunculi read about Adol's adventures or something?
I think so.
There's something like that.
Because that's part of the in-story thing, is that Adol has been publishing his adventures, you know, around. So he's kind of known, right?
Story-wise,
he doesn't start writing his books until much, much later in the universe world. They got it. The dude who created the other homunculi, he got it during the process of accessing his memories in regards to Adol's connections to gods and whatnot, trying to create an ultimate being.
Yeah.
So the monsters were being created created literally from Adol's memories. Because again, at this point in time, the books have not been written. He writes the books like after he stops adventuring for a while, for a good number of years.
And just to be clear, as far as the Ease timeline goes, this is the latest game in the timeline.
Yes.
And right. That it takes place last. There's no, this isn't like a prequel to anything. It's
no.
Even
10 is earlier.
Yes, 10's much earlier, right?
Yeah.
That is not, I don't think that's true, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
10 is definitely earlier. 100% sure.
No, I meant for 9. No, 9 is indeed the last. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But I mean, one of the things AC. But the thing about Ease is like it does have this overarching lore and story that's there, but you don't. Like, you can play these games in any order. Yeah, you don't need to know any of that stuff. It's not... most of it in this game, like, the actual real tie-ins is more played for, like, jokey laughs than anything. And you're not going to be missing anything by playing these games in any order you want.
And I think a lot of it in here was just because it was an anniversary. I forget which anniversary it was when this came out.
35th, maybe? I don't remember.
Something like that.
Yeah, the people that made this one are very aware of of Adol, of the whole Ease lore, because of the joke that they make at the very beginning of the game. It's like, you've been responsible for a lot of shipwrecks.
And lost relics.
Why do you keep losing every relic that you end up...
losing legendary weapons...
Yeah. So very, very tongue in cheek there, but I loved it. Absolutely adored it when that came up. And appreciate the callbacks to the different bosses.
Up your right, Wheels. That was the 30th anniversary of Ease 1.
Okay.
Wow. So let's see.
It's such a good game though.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite in the series is still Celceta, just because I had such a good time with that game, but this one could very well rival it.
It's really good.
I think that they definitely succeeded in growing up the series a lot with this, with kind of giving it a little bit more of a mature theme, while still keeping it somewhat lighthearted. And kind of taking the graphical, taking it to the next graphical level by setting it in a giant city where you have to take so much more stuff into consideration.
Yeah, this game really took everything they learned from like the past few games and put it to really good use. Like even like the monster wave battles were better than they were in
They were so much better. They were so annoying in Ease 8. That was easily the worst part of Ease 8 for me. You'd be wandering across the island and you'd have one of those wave battles and you'd have to drop whatever you were doing and go do that annoying wave after wave battle. And it was, you know, like just dialing it back in this one helped a lot.
Yeah.
And you're only doing it when you're kind of like unlocking the next area.
And I thought the dungeons were a lot better too.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't like pinpoint like this is what they did better. They just felt better.
I love the dungeons in this, because they had so much verticality to them, and you know, kind of like a Zelda game. Each dungeon kind of tied in with what you had just learned from your new companion. And you got to play around with that a little bit. And I got lost in some of them, but it was a good kind of lost where... I don't know how to put it. It's like, I know I can't find where I'm going, but it's okay. Would the outdoor areas be considered dungeons? Or just kind of like side areas?
Side areas, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, because there were dungeons inside of those. Separate.
Yeah.
But everything led back to Bolduc.
Yep.
I did find it kind of interesting.
Literally.
That, these characters are essentially superheroes, and you could turn into your monstrum form like right in front of people, and they were fine with it. Wouldn't freak out.
Yeah, there's a weird how they did that.
No, I think they would like, you would hear dialogue actually saying, "Oh, it's a monstrum." If you did that, but like for the most part, they wouldn't call the guards because most people didn't like the guards were against the monstrum, but like the normal people just generally didn't care.
especially since some of the monstrums like White Cat were sort of Robin Hood-esque characters where they did crime, but for good. And yes, Josh, I'm glad you brought up the, what are they called, the tower defense battles?
Oh, jeez. In this one, it was the...
Grimwald Knox?
The Grimwald Knox, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I had a lot better time doing those in this game than I did in PS8, just because they had a lot more variety, since they didn't all take place on the beach. You had to seek them out around the town.
That's not true. There was not just the beach, there was also the cliffs behind you, too.
And that was it.
I had forgot about the cliffs behind me.
Well, Kelly, if you had actually played the Vita version, you wouldn't have had to play any of that. That was added into the PS4 version of 8.
That was
extra.
I could have played the Vita version and not done any of those?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God.
And I'm normally not someone that hates tower defense, but I just got tired of those.
Yeah,
I said, the worst part for me about it is that you had no control over it. In this game, you kind of controlled like when you wanted to do them or not. You know, it's how you progressed the story. In Ease 8, it was just like you'd be wandering around the island and they would call you back.
Ran back.
You didn't have to go, but if you didn't, they trashed your village and you kind of like had to spend a bunch of time fixing stuff, so it was so annoying.
Yeah, like even though it made sense story-wise, you know, giant monsters attacking the village, but it just felt forced and annoying.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it felt a lot more integrated with the story.
And had different gameplay mechanics too, like some of them you fought monsters and some of them you had to touch a certain number of orbs to get past them. I don't know if there was any more.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a hot minute.
But put it this way, I didn't hate him like I did in the other games.
No, this one did it well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I didn't always necessarily want to do them, but I never was like, this sucks.
I think it just kind of tied into the discovery thing, like, oh, hey, what's this one going to be like?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I loved fighting so much that I enjoyed fighting in those, too. The combat just felt so good in this game.
Yeah, and just I think you say discovery is a good way to describe everything in this game. Like, getting a new character was exciting because, hey, you get a new ability and I get to play around with a new character. Like, the action has gotten so good in these games that I think having a bunch of well-designed characters in it is always fun because it's a blast to mess around with the different characters and their different abilities. It's fun. This game is fun.
I'm really curious what the combat's going to be like in 10.
Because
thus far, the only thing I really know about 10 is giving it all a bug. I know we've talked about it on RPG Cast a couple of times, but I haven't paid too much attention to the rest of the news coming out of the game because I know I'm going to get it.
Mm.
It's an Ease game. It's going to be amazing. I'm just curious what the how it's going to compare to this one, because this one I think is the best they've ever done.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to top it.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to the boat combat in 10.
If you lose, is his boat going to wreck and then he has to like swim back to shore and build a new boat? That would be great.
If you lose, honestly, you have to play through East 1 and 2.
Oh no! Oh no! Bump combat and all.
That actually would be pretty fun.
It's a prequel and we didn't tell you.
Ease 1 just pops up in a little window.
Not even like the remastered version. It's like, here's the
original,
the turbo CD version, so you at least get nicer music.
and of course, the music in this game is just fantastic.
Oh, like, for sure.
Ease music always is. I certainly cannot get enough of it. I was listening to it before the show just to pick out stuff to put in the sheet to edit it. And it's like, you've got slow tracks, you've got power metal tracks, you've got nice orchestrated stuff. It's just great all around.
This soundtrack is your jam, isn't it, Kelly?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right, if there's one critique about it, it does have the Falcom problem of not enough of voice acting sections. You know, yes. You have some of those sections where you're just like, shouldn't this whole scene be voice acted? And they do that. They do some more of that thing where, like, you know, they voice act all the different characters rather than just picking the most important scenes.
Is that like a budget thing? Like, I've never understood exactly what's going on with that.
The thing I have read about it is that Falcom likes to, I know this is especially true in the Trails series, they like to voice act as many of the different characters as possible so that the player gets a sense of what the character is like, and thus they kind of use their voice acting budget on, you know, having like 80 or 100 different voice actors, but, you know, like, then that kind of cuts down on how much they can actually, how much of the overall game they can actually voice act, because they're spending so much on all the different voice actors.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense. I don't really love
it. No, I know. It's still frustrating.
Yeah.
I think they should, it's not a totally crazy idea, but I think they should like dial the balance a little bit more. Maybe have a few more characters that just don't get voice acted, and like stretch out some of the more, make sure they get some of the important scenes actually fully voice acted.
I mean, can you imagine what a scene like that 145-minute long scene in Trails of Cold Steel 4 cost them?
There's so many voice acting characters.
Yeah.
Everybody has to show up.
And they're all there, and they're all talking, and in some cases, some people are talking to each other. Like, I know Matt Mercer voices several characters in that series.
No, Kelly, you're bringing back bad memories. No. Back to Ease.
Yeah. I think Ease has good voice acting, and I think it's definitely a step up, especially since the last game kind of had a sucky localization that they had to come back and fix later.
At least they did fix it, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that the last one was terrible. It had a couple of like such glaring mistakes that the internet just was going to pop on them.
I am sure it wasn't that bad.
Big Hole was just, you know, so egregious because it was perfectly fine at the original Japanese release, whatever it was, like the crevasse or something like that. And then you're like, why the hell do you change this to Big Hole, guys? Come on.
Although Dogi is still Dogi.
What is he supposed to be?
Going to the voice actor. No, I meant like the voice actor, the person that, you know, who's like in everything. He's still the same.
It's Patrick Seitz. I know that.
With the names, unless they're like,
I remember that voice because he, like you said, he shows up in everything, and I know him most for being both Garage Hell Scream and WoW and Frankie in One Piece. And it bothers me way too much.
Oh my god, yeah. That just blew my mind.
yeah.
The
character I hate the most in WoW voices one of my favorite One Piece characters. and I recognize him instantly anytime he shows up in anything, because he has such a distinct voice.
All right, while we're complaining to Falcom about stuff, I'm going to complain to Falcom about not giving my boy Dogi some more to do. This is the second game in a row where I've gotten no playable Dogi, and I'm very disappointed in this.
Yeah, he hasn't been playable since E7.
Yeah, it doesn't look like he's going to be in 10, so I'm going to have to wait a long time.
Maybe he just needs his own spinoff. Dogi breaks walls.
Yeah, Dogi breaks through walls. I mean, he's in prison and everything in this one, and, you know, they have the perfect thing of Dogi to break through a wall, and they don't use it. Come on, Falcom, what are you doing?
Yeah.
As Paws put it, he was a house husband. I mean, he kind of was. He was the one running the bar.
Yeah, he needs to be a playable character.
Although he did get the one... he did get the one scene in the Colosseum where he had to where he got to fight a bull.
No, I concur. Doggy definitely needs more screen time because he's such a fun character to both see and play as. Oh, well. I mean, like I said, they were trying something different with this game because it's one of the few that he doesn't start out with a shipwreck. I think Chris and I on RPG Cast went through one day and tried to remember every game that started out with a shipwreck. This not being one of them.
It's a decent number of them.
It's most
less than you think, but...
Well, 7, he starts on a boat, but it doesn't crash.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot of them.
I mean, 10, he has a boat.
I'm sure it's going to crash at some point.
Well, it has to, because 7, I think 10 is taking place before... Sorry, I've got the timeline wiki open just for this.
Well, I imagine... Yeah, so 10... I imagine that he has a boat in 10 because he wrecked a boat.
Falcom knows the assignment here. They're going to give us a boat wreck at some point.
They even made a joke. Well, 10... I wouldn't want to be on a boat with Aiden at all. One of the directors made that joke. They know the drill.
Takes place after 1 and 2, but before 4.
Before 4.
But Great Forest of Celceta.
After or before 3, though?
4 takes place before 3.
4 takes place before 3. Oh, God, this gets so confusing.
Yes.
You have, like, 6 and 7 that are back-to-back, but then 8 is before 6.
I try not to dwell too...
Yes, 8 is before 6, but after 5.
I try not to dwell on it too much, Wheels, because it gives me a headache.
Yeah.
But that's
like, it's really confusing because, you know, like... Like, it's really confusing because some of the old ones, like, Falcom didn't even make, you know? It's
like,
they have the ones they just contracted out. There were 2 different versions of 4?
Yeah, you have
by
to...
By 2 just, different companies?
If there's a remake, though, you have to just ignore it. So we can't pay attention to the old versions of 4 or 3 anymore. So I'm sure we're going to get a remake of 5 eventually.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I'm waiting with bated breath for a remake of 5. As far as I'm concerned, that one's kind of the black sheep that needs an official entry. I played 5, and it's not a bad game, but man, it is weird. Has a huge focus on magic compared to the other ones.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, considering right after that, it was like super fast melee combat for several games.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of 6 either, but mostly because that one plays a little bit slower, and that was also a PSP one, or I tried to play it on the PSP, so the load times are horrible.
Have you played the PC version?
No, not yet.
It's a lot better.
I maybe the next time there's a huge sale, I might pick them all up on PC again so that I can play them on my Steam Deck. But as far as pricing for 9 goes, it's still $60 on all the digital stores, but you can catch them on sale for around 30, or if you're still hanging on to your physical discs, you can find at least the PS4 version for a fairly decent price on the used market. The Switch versions and the PS5 versions must not have had a huge print run, because I noticed that those were running a little bit more expensive.
The PS5 version might just be because that's more recent. I think that was last year, actually.
Yeah, it was. I just found it weird because it almost always is that the Switch version is the hardest to find, but yeah. I was having trouble finding listings for the... How do you say NTSC English one on eBay? But yeah, I'd say just wait for a sale. It's usually $30. Weirdly enough, on the Switch, for some reason, the Digital Deluxe is $30, while the rest of them are $60.
Is it on sale?
I don't know. I thought, well, surely this $30 is just an upgrade to the Digital Deluxe. No, it said it came with the full game and the DLC, so...
It might be a sale. I've seen them do a lot of weird sales like that, where, like, the Digital Deluxe is on sale, but not the regular one.
Yeah,
You know, that's cool, but unexpected.
I just thought it was
strange.
Yeah, I'm not complaining.
You could just see why I thought it was an error.
Mm-hmm. No, I've seen a lot of sales like that, and they're always confusing whenever I see them.
But if you want a decent action RPG with lots of exploration and just lots of fun combat, you can't go wrong with this game. And I forgot, didn't they put Ease 8 on PS5 recently too?
Yes. Yes, I know, because I bought that version and dumped my PS4 version.
I was going to say, I feel like that was like as soon as last year. I'm happy that they're doing more versions. It just seemed kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I don't know why they're doing that. I'm not complaining.
They port. Yeah, exactly. They're constantly porting their old stuff to whatever the newest thing is. I mean, they've always... How many systems is Ease 1 and 2 on?
Many.
Like 25?
Oh, many, but... it's funny you bring that up, because it's been a long time since the last one, and I think we're overdue for...
That's fair. Maybe they're waiting for the new Switch. They'll do a new Switch version of Bump Combat.
Oh, God. Can I... The Bump Combat, it's fine. It's whatever. Can I get like an Oath and Fulgana of 1 and 2, please?
That would be fun. That would be fun.
Actually, yeah. I would be happy with that, too.
Yeah.
Because as much as I like the Bump Combat, it does kind of get old after a while.
Oh, it does. Well, thankfully, the first game is only like 5 hours long, so.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Gosh, I think I spend longer in the end tower in that game than I do the rest of the game.
I'm pretty sure most of the game is actually in the tower. I think isn't 2 the same, like that there's some giant temple.
Yeah.
And that's like a giant chunk of the game too.
I always get it lost around the point where you have to dress like the Rue.
Yeah.
To get around.
Those games need another update.
Yes, I agree.
Like, the last one looks really nice, but it's still like, this is an ancient game with a pretty coating.
Well, it was an ancient game that then, you know, they kind of like put a coat of paint on and stuck it on PSP, and that's basically the last time they did. I mean, they released it on PC, but it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the newest PC version is the same as that PSP release.
So we're over a decade or more, right?
Yeah, we're overdue for some ports.
Don't worry, they got to fill in. That's usually, you know, they always have their one big release in September, and then they've got like port or re-release in like March or whatever. That's usually their cadence. Yeah.
I mean, and we joke about it, but I kind of love they do that, because it keeps all their series like fresh and relevant, and it makes it so most of their games are not hard to find. Like if you wanted to get someone in the Trail series and have them play them all, I can get them all on PC.
Yep.
I mean, as much as people complain about Square doing nothing but releasing their old games, at least they make them available. And same with Falcom.
I mean, at least Bandai's taking the hint and giving us older Tales of games, too.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's taken them long enough. There have been a lot of those Tales games that just aren't really playable.
Yeah, and especially now with longer distance between the main entries in that series, they're just leaving like this weird void. Surprised it took them this long.
I'm mad that we got Tales knockoff and that slime game and not a collection with the classic 2D Tales games.
Yeah, I can do without those.
Oh, you don't like Fantasia or Destiny?
Destiny's fine. I can't stand Fantasia. I think it's awful.
What about Eternia?
It's fine.
Aw. Oh, well.
I love Eternia, except for the dungeon that is basically a game board.
It's been a while. I don't remember that bit.
I only remember that because of the fact I was playing it on our channel, and that is the point where I stopped playing it on our channel. Because I was like, it is not going to be fun for people watching me play this and get stuck in this dungeon for 2 hours a day for who knows how long. So I was going to do it off stream, and then I was just like, nope, I don't have the patience for this like I did when I was a kid. Or maybe I got really lucky as a kid and got through it first try. I don't remember.
I just remember being incredibly upset that thanks to Sony's stupid rules that we didn't get the PSP version of Eternia here. I had to import a copy from the UK.
Oh, that was the version I was playing.
Gotcha. And plus trying to find a version that didn't have a glitch was also kind of a pain because I guess there was like a game breaking bug.
Ooh.
In that version too. So looking at eBay listings, that all the ones that work said version 1.2. So there you go.
Do I need to look at my PSV copy now?
I don't know. I just remembered that that was the version that I had bought. I guess you have to put it in your PSP and see what version it says it is.
Oh boy.
Of course, my PSP was so jank anyway from all the modding that I did to it. At one point, not even being able to play Persona 1 because of the whole... It was one version and my mods could only play up to so much. And oh, jailbreaking. It's a pain in the ass. And speaking of jailbreaking, I said we break out of this backtrack jail and move on to the roundtable, unless we have anything else we want to contribute to about Ease 9.
Oh no, we weren't all homunculi all along, were we?
No, I'm pretty sure I'm not a homunculus.
Okay. The real homunculi were the friends we made along the way.
Yep. Well, let's take a brief musical interlude and then we'll be back with the roundtable. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable, our personal feelings about Ease 9 Monstrum Nox, our favorites, our associative memories. So I always ask first, what was your favorite moment from the game?
The one I remembered the most, it was this boss battle that you had. It was against this centipede boss, and you had to fight it as it was going up the spiral staircase. And you had to use like Doll's ability to like figure out what the weak sections of the centipede like thing were. And then once you got to the top, you had to like use Renegade Shadow Dive to actually get underneath it and actually do damage. It was like this. The epicness, and you got that awesome rock music going on the whole way as you're fighting your way up the staircase, and it was just like the combination of the way it integrated all the different abilities and the awesome music and the epicness of it. It was just like peak Ease. I loved it. Loved it. Loved it.
That's not how I fought that boss.
They really went out of their way to make the boss fights in this game special, didn't they?
I think so. I think they really nailed it on doing at least a pretty good job of incorporating all the different special abilities and allowing you to use them in interesting ways to tackle the bosses.
I did say mine in the previous segment, but I'll say it again. The joke about Adol's constant shipwrecks. Just because I may be wrong, but I do think that's the first time the series had acknowledged that being a thing.
They're finally winking at the player.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love fourth wall breaks like that. Wheels, Tam?
You can go first.
So my favorite scene has to be, I forget the character. I'm terrible with character names, and we know this, but the Raging Bull, when she kind of outs herself at the arena, by, you know, because Dogi is just taking down a bull, and then, like, some monster escapes, and she's sitting there watching this, and, like, her fiance, her, you know, the guy she really likes is in the arena fighting, because he's an arena fighter, making money, and huge monster comes out, and she just leaps in, turning into her monstrum form, like, in the midway, and by this point, you kind of already know she is that, but I thought that was just a really cool scene, and I will be honest, I was very happy that she got her happy ending by marrying her childhood friend. I was very happy to see that.
That was a satisfying ending.
Yeah, I honestly felt this is probably the one out of the two East games I've played where the ending was, there was no bad bit to the ending. Like East 8, someone does not get a happy ending. I was very upset by that. I'm still very upset by that. But East 9, everyone got at least somewhat of a happy ending. Except for the bad dude, but he deserved it.
Did you have one, Wheels?
For me, it's definitely that first, the first like WTF moment when you see the second Adol still in prison and just wondering what the hell is going on. I think that's such a cool like story moment and something the series hasn't really done before that makes you kind of wonder for like almost the whole game, like, am I playing as Adol actually? it's just such a cool
Adol.
Yes. I don't think they're going to be able to recreate that again, but it sets this really cool like mystery tone for this game. It's
two
great.
Adults.
Yes.
What sorcery is this?
It's so perfect the way they do it too, because they go through the whole everything you'd expect to happen. There's a prison break, and I'll get shot with that bullet. You get your powers. It's like, you know, the standard run of the mill setup, and then it throws a swerve at you, and you're just like, wait, what?
You're back in prison. You're like, no, yeah. I like what? So, yeah. And it never explains. It just keeps flashing to it.
Yes. And that's the perfect way to do it, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And
leave you guessing the whole
way. Like the whole game. It's so cool. And like I said, they just play on it by just going with, like, you know, the standard thing you'd expect from a JRPG or an anime or anything like that. And just, but not quite. So good.
So then my next question, your favorite character.
This is hard for me because I liked all of them kind of. I don't know that one of them necessarily stuck out that much to me. I think Krisha, probably the cat character, probably sticks out in my mind most. I don't know if that's because she was my favorite or she was just the first one that you get and thus you spend the whole game with her, and then maybe that's just like sticking in my head more now, like 3 years later.
Yeah. I'd pick her too, and I think a lot of it has to do with she's like the first companion you get, and she's doing kind of a lot of the talking because Adol doesn't talk much. So she kind of does a lot of the heavy lifting of the story early on. It's kind of easy to get attached to her.
Yeah, I've got to say White Cat too, just because I liked her personality and just her spunk, the way that she was cheery. And plus, I'm always a sucker for Robin Hood-like characters, and that's basically what she was.
She's also one of the most fun characters to play as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gives you that running up walls ability, and that is so much fun.
And she's one of the fastest characters. Sorry.
I will admit I do like the female characters generally more than guys. I did not like Hawk. I will say that right up. I did not like Hawk. He was a jerk.
Isn't that intended though?
It's intended, but I'm still allowed not to like him. But I mean, I love Krisha. She is such a sweetheart. Also one of my favorite anime and video game VAs, Christine V, who is Velvet in Berseria. But I'm also a big. I was a big fan of. I can't forget the character's name, but the one who's the raging bull. You know, I loved her character.
I liked her too.
She was the big sister type who literally was a big sister. You know, she has two younger children. Two younger siblings she takes care of. She's very tomboyish, but at the same time very girly too. But honestly, like, my favorite was Doll.
She's pretty cool.
And then I'm trying to remember what Doll's name was, but I love the fact that she literally goes from this like antique doll like all the time to, you know, still a doll but like tall. But her outfit was very elegant, and I loved her, the way she moved in battle. She was the one I equipped with the one that allowed her to like be everything's strong against everything's weakness for fighting, only because of the fact her moveset was a lot of like sweeps and area attack.
So then I have to ask, did you guys have a favorite Monstrum power that you liked using the most?
Black Cat running up attack.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean mushroom power. Right. I'm sorry. Running up walls then.
Oh, yeah. Running up walls.
Yes.
And I think it's because every game has a glide ability, but I feel like very few games have a running up walls ability. And when they do, it's very limited. But in this game, you can practically run up any wall you want to. Though it does get annoying when you can tell they don't want you running up certain walls because they have an overhang or, in the case of the outdoor areas, like a whip around the canyon. But you could certainly try.
I love trying to figure out ways to get around those, actually.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, being able to run up a wall like Sonic is such a fantasy for me. So being able to do that in that game was just awesome.
It's the best.
So most of us are Black Cat stands and most of us are run up the wall stands.
Basically, yeah.
No, I did like the hook shot too.
The teleporting, yeah. Just like zipping from place to place to place to place to place, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just wish that there were more places that let you do it.
I wonder if some of that is just because it's the first one they give you. They want to kind of like also kind of rein you in a little bit so that you have a reason to come back later to get to use the other abilities to get to those places again.
Yeah, I think if there were too many of them, it would make kind of most of the other abilities almost pointless.
Because that is part of the fun, is exploring and just seeing, like, oh, now I've got the glide ability. Can I glide over to that roof? Ooh, maybe I can do that now if I get up real high.
Seeing how high up you can get and then seeing how far you can glide.
Yeah, and honestly, for a game from not a giant team, it's kind of impressive how many, like, there's just not a lot of like invisible walls that make it feel like the city is less explorable that you might see in a lot of open worldy games. I mean, they're there, but not as many, and a lot of them are kind of like story-based too, which is a smart thing to do. Like, oh, I can't just glide out of town because we can't really leave town. You know, things like that. So
we have story reasons, but yeah.
Yeah. It just makes it so it doesn't feel like you're restricted. It feels like an actual like city you can jump and fly around. It's good. It's very good.
I mean, you know, like, this game is not going to be as polished as something like Assassin's Creed because, you know, this, like, I was looking it up during our time, you know, during our break, and it's like 60 something employees that Falcom has. They don't have hundreds and thousands of staffers working on this thing, so they're somewhat limited. It's just, to me, it's amazing what they pulled off, how tight together this game feels for just such a small staff.
I feel like Falcom is just very good. They do a very good job of working with what they have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it honestly would make me worried.
And they're very consistent with it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would be very worried if they ever said, like, hey, we're going to make a high definition 4K game. I'd be like, no, please, dear God, no. You will destroy yourselves.
Would
it won't even be worth it.
Would any of you know, was this game its own engine, or were they using the Ease 8 engine?
I think they were still using the Ease 8.
Unreal. I thought they were using Unreal.
Were they?
I don't know. What do they use in the Trails Through Daybreak?
I think that's still like a modified version of that old Sony engine, I think.
Okay, so it was not Unreal. That's on me.
Falcom, they've always used custom engines.
Yamaneko engine.
Okay. Huh.
So it's probably their own engine.
They always have, yeah, for Ease.
I'm just always interested what these smaller companies use for stuff like that. So then kind of the final question, do you guys have any associative memories with these games? Or with this game?
For me, it was playing it for review. So I got it like whatever it was, like a week and a half before it came out. And
nice.
Playing it in like a mad dash, trying to get it done before the it released. This came out like right before COVID vaccines finally started becoming available. So this was like one of the last games I still associate with being cooped up in my apartment, not being able to go anywhere.
Because I noticed that the gap between the Japanese and the American release was about 2 years, and the wiki article didn't really say anything about whether or not that game was delayed by COVID coming out in the U.S., but it wouldn't surprise me if it was.
I would assume.
Yeah, surely.
It could just be like, part of it could just be like with East 10, like they seem to want to wait until they have the Switch port.
Yeah.
Or at least have the Switch port in development. I can't remember. Did those come out at the same time in the U.S. or?
No, not for Monster Knox. I think so. It was, I want to say it was several months apart. I have it in the sheet right here. Yeah, PS4 was February 2nd. Switch was July.
Okay.
So, like I said, I remember playing it at the beginning of the year, and I remember, I think, Josh, you were playing it, and Paul was playing it as well, and we were all kind of just gushing in our private chat about how awesome the game was.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, I was watching Paul's play it on the channel, and it was literally the reason why I gave Issa a chance. I was watching her play this one.
And I always find it amusing when a bunch of us are playing a game at the same time and have to be like, "Well, where are you? Well, I'm here. Where are you? Well, I just got a doll." Just kind of comparing notes over Discord, which is always a blast. It's that schoolyard thing all over again when you had friends that were playing the same game as you. That's my memory.
I don't really have any clear memories other than watching Paw's stream. Just honestly, the past few years, a lot of stuff just mushes together.
Yeah.
Especially in the still cooped up times. That, so. It's like, well, I was cooped up, so that puts it at, I have no idea. Yeah. I did.
I mean, I still had to travel in for my work, so that was not an issue for me. Oof. I just, the most memorable thing was again watching Paul's play it on our stream,
yeah,
on our channel, because it was one of the early, because I think that was right when we really started like pushing our streaming. So it was one of the first ones that really got a lot of attention on our channel because of the fact it was again one of our earliest, you know, full
Paul's was playing on a stream right after it, pretty much right after it came out, right? My vague recollection.
Yeah, yeah. Those were fun streams. I did actually play the Japanese version of this game before it came out to the US.
Oh?
Which is very hard to get anywhere, since it's a lot more story heavy than older East games. But, I came away with the impression even then that, like, the combat in this game was really, really good. I don't think I got farther in the Japanese version than like having two characters. So it's pretty hard to progress in this game if you can't read anything.
Yeah, that's understandable. And I imagine putting your phone up to the thing with Google Translate's too much of a hassle.
Yeah. I never would bother with that.
That's one thing it brings back a memory. Like, I think that they, you know, like Ease 8, what's the way to put it? The trailsification of Ease that has been happening as the games have progressed. They've gotten heavier and heavier and heavier on the story. Mm-hmm. And Ease 8 was one where it was just like that was a long game in terms of the story. And I think this game also kind of like it dialed it back just a little bit. This was a little. It didn't go on for quite so long. I think it had a snappier pace to it that just kind of like felt a little bit more like Ease rather than a Trails game that also happens to have action combat that maybe Ease 8 kind of was venturing over into that territory, at least for me.
Yeah. I could agree with that. Like I still see a lot of like old school, putting that in air quotes, East fans whine about the newer games, and I think they're kind of missing a lot.
Mm-hmm. I don't think bump combat was gonna last past the 16-bit era, guys.
No, I don't think that's what they're complaining. Like, people are always like, oh, like Oath and Fulgana is like this perfect game, and because there's not a lot of talking or anything, and it's more because that was a remake of an old game, and if you play any other games from that era, there's a lot more talking. Like, they want story. They've always wanted more story in East, and I think if you think they didn't, you haven't really been playing the series.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I do get annoyed when a game is talky for talky's sake. Like right. You said, Josh, the cold stare, the trailsification, where everybody's going to comment on the glasses or whatever, and it's just meaningless dialogue that doesn't push the story forward. But I don't think this game did that.
No, and
it's
I think
not too bad. Yeah. There's still a few instances where everybody in the party has to like comment on something, and it goes on slightly too long. But you know, it's. I feel like the balance was a little bit better here in 9 than it was in 8. Yeah. Maybe that's my love of the rest of the game, like shining over.
No, I don't.
Clouding my views.
I don't think you're far off, and I think 7 kind of had a similar issue at times. But I really think they're kind of learning that, like, this, you know, this is an action RPG, and you really need a better balance, and you can't like have as much talking as you would in like a Trails game. It's like there has to be a better balance between the action and the story.
I did skip a lot of dialogue in 7. I'm not gonna lie, because I thought 7.
I love that game, but the dialogue is not great.
Yeah, I did think that one got a little bit too talky for my liking.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think the action is great, and I think half the time I wish everyone would just shut up.
I mean, I feel weird saying it because I get annoyed when people are like, I don't like RPGs, they're too talky. Then why are you playing an RPG? You need to go play I don't know, Assassin's Creed or something. But there is a limit, too.
Yeah. like everything in life, you have to strike a balance. And, you know, like, some games are better than others. And I mean, in fairness to Falcom, like, the people who talk about wanting, like, an old-school ease game that's, like, 10 hours long, I'm like, you can't really make those kind of games anymore. Like, people would be, you know, would riot in the streets if you tried to charge $60 for, like, a 10-hour game.
When people had a conniption fit over the $30 for the 10 hours of Stray, one of the most amazing games I've ever played in my life, cat bias notwithstanding, you have a 10-hour action RPG, people are going to lose their minds.
Yeah.
And I'm with them to some degree. I wish that RPGs could be a little bit on the short side, just because I have limited time nowadays and don't have the time to devote to.
And there's too many good RPGs.
Yeah,
there really are.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I always feel kind of bad, like, complaining that an RPG is talky, too, because, like, I've played plenty of games that talk endlessly that I absolutely love because it's, like, good dialogue and paced well and moves the story along. So it's really about how you're doing it more than the quantity.
Yes.
And I think East is still kind of trying to find a balance there.
I agree.
I think one thing I kind of hope they would do is move more conversations into, like, characters bantering while you're in the middle of the action. I think would help the series a lot.
I definitely think that helped a lot in the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yes. Absolutely.
A lot of that stuff was part of the action, and you know, that way you're not missing dialogue, but you're also not, you know, sitting there bored, pressing the button constantly, waiting for the dialogue to change, or you know, waking up your controller if you have the dialogue on auto, like I tend to do. That's funny. I finished Lost Odyssey recently, and when I was watching the ending, when the controller dies on the 360, it just pauses the game. So I was like, oh, I haven't had to deal with this in a hot minute. nudge the controller to wake it back up so I can finish the ending. And I've got to go back and watch all of the what are they called? The Thousand Years of Dreams.
Oh, those are good.
I put those on a YouTube playlist that I could watch them all at once.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. But, like, a lot of those are real tearjerkers.
Yeah, I imagine I'd have to be in the right mood to watch those. So we're going to get to that.
If I remember right, though, that was written by an actual author.
Yeah.
They hired an author who was known for that type of writing to do those. And there's some people who believe the story bits for those are better than the game itself.
I couldn't argue with that in a lot of cases, actually.
Yep. Well, I think we're about to put a lid on Monster Nox. And speaking of games that are really top with their dialogue, we got Triangle Strategy next.
Oh, I love that game.
That was a game that was just peak writing for me. One of those ones that every single word was used flawlessly in that. And I can't wait to talk about it. Because I'm going to be honest, yeah. I think that game really revolutionized what strategy RPG should be like in 2024.
I wanted to go back and play more of that game, but I'm still not over the ending I got.
Oh,
which ending?
It's the ending for oh my god, I'm terrible at remembering names. The main girl character, like her ending.
Yeah, I had to play through that game twice to get a good ending. Because if you're just playing it naturally, if you're playing naturally without a guide, you're gonna piss somebody off if you play it without a guide to get the true ending.
That game is incredible, though.
Oh, one of the best games I think.
Yeah, but it's kind of recommended. It's kind of built though that you're not supposed to get the true ending first. In fact, it's kind of built that you should get the three other endings and then go for the true ending. But I will go into that next week next time, because I have signed up for that podcast. I just have to see if the day is available at work.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one, because that's an amazing game and I can't wait to talk about it. In the meantime, thank you, Wheels, for hanging out.
Of course.
Thank you, Josh. And thank you and happy birthday, Tam.
Happy birthday, Tam. Oh, wow.
Thank you.
We put the show specifically on his birthday because he requested it.
Well, only because it timed up well for like days off, because I'm working Monday. And so I didn't want to be like, take my birthday off, take Wednesday off, work Friday, then get 2 days off. And I didn't want to do a 3 day off because I work an evening shift, so I get shift differential. And 10 and a half hours of pay is much different than losing 7 hours of differential pay. Like I'm being paid, you know, for my PTO, but I lose my shift differential, which is an extra like $6 an hour because of how much I make.
I get it. I used to have to deal with that stuff when I wasn't salary too, so I completely get it. And that's why we record on Wednesdays, because it gives us 2 days a week to kind of flex if we need to move it to Tuesday or Thursday. So a little behind the scenes stuff there. And of course, thank you, Matt, as always, for editing and being my co-host.
You're welcome.
And thank you, listener, for coming to hang out with us to talk about some ease. We'll be back in a pair of weeks for some Triangle Strategy. Have a good one.